Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by and welcome to the National All-EN call. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You can also ask a question through the chat feature located on the left corner of your screen. If you need to reach an operator at any time, please press star 0. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Thursday, September 11, 2014. I would now like to turn the conference over to Ms. Michelle Lazer. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, everyone, and I'm going to actually turn it over at this time to Rob Pat. Rob?
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us today for this All-EN call. I'm Robert Paff, Acting Deputy Associate Commissioner in the Office of Research, Demonstration, and Employment Support, and we are very glad that those of you who could take some time today to participate are doing so. We have a lot of information to share with you today, a pretty packed agenda, so I don't want to take a lot of time. I want to get right into the agenda, but I encourage you to ask your questions and make comments as necessary. And again, I want to thank you for your service that you provide to our beneficiaries to in an attempt to get them employed. And we sincerely appreciate the partnership that you provide with us for the ticket program. So without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to Donna DeJulius.
Thank you, Rob, and hello, everyone. Again, thank you for joining us on the call today. We're going to begin with a very, very good effective practices presentation that I'm excited to bring to you. If you've not yet seen it, it is on our website at www.yourtickettowork.com. On the front page, just click on the All-EN call, and you'll see the documents and the presentation there. I'm pleased to present Jennifer Raddick, MSCRC from Goodwill Keystone area in Pennsylvania, and her Ticket to Work administrative assistant, Elaine Trinkle, who is doing today's presentation called Stubs, Stats, and Starts. Jennifer?
Hi, my name is Jennifer Raddick. I am the Ticket to Work program manager for Goodwill Keystone area. Goodwill Keystone area provides services in 22 Pennsylvania counties, including urban, suburban, and rural areas.
I'm Elaine Trinkle, the administrative assistant for the Ticket to Work program. I'm also the administrative assistant for 12 of the 22 counties that Goodwill Keystone area provides services in.
Okay, now Goodwill has been an employment network since 2004. However, it was not until 2009 that we hired someone to undertake the growth of this program. Since then, we've had 303 Ticket to Work referrals, 171 tickets have been assigned. There are currently 67 active tickets. We've placed 110 individuals into employment, and we've had over $184,000 in revenue. Now, for today's presentation, the presentation is called Sub, Stats, and Starts, and the objectives are the maintenance of the Ticket to Work caseload for each employment specialist within our 22 Pennsylvania County territory, and ensure the efficient assignment of beneficiaries. The collection of and verification of pay and pay stubs, which is the stubs part, to maintain the most current employment and employer information for each working beneficiary, which is the stats part, and maintain the most current placement and retention records, which is the starts part. We also try to proactively identify individuals for potential Partnership Plus candidates. So what is stubs, stats, and starts? It's a monthly email. It's individualized to each one of our employment specialists within our 22 counties. It only includes information that's specific for that employment specialist. The administrative assistant for that region is included in the email for the purpose of cross-reference, and the employment services manager is included for supervision purposes. The information is used as a case management tool, cross-referenced against the master Ticket to Work caseload. Now, the first part of our stub, stats, and starts email is our greeting. The email, again, does go out monthly, and it's individually written for each employment specialist, including only the information of the individuals, the names of the individuals that are assigned to them. This explains the purpose of the email and the information to follow. It provides a brief description of the stub, stats, and starts email. The next slide is a screenshot of our Stubbs, Stats, and Starks email portion, the greeting portion. As you can see, it kind of breaks down the Stubbs, the Stats, and the Starks that we're trying to collect each month. Next, the next portion of our email is the case management portion. This is a great way to provide program management each month. It's a master tracking sheet. We keep a master tracking sheet that's kept on our encrypted drive. The master tracking sheet is cross-referenced each month against the Tickets Work Maximus portal. The email serves as another way to cross-reference and maintain current and active caseloads for each employment specialist. This portion of the email is broken down into categories, including intake / IWP, job find, job support, and partnership plus. So the next slide is a screenshot of what that portion of our Stubbs, Stats, and Starks email looks like. Next, the Stubbs, Stats, and Starks subs portion of the email. In order to submit for milestone and outcome payments, we must also provide verification of pay for wages earned by the beneficiaries. We explain this responsibility to the beneficiary from the onset of the beneficiary employment network relationship. When necessary, we will make every effort to assist the individuals in obtaining their pay stubs so that they may report their earnings to Social Security, provide that verification of pay for the employment network, and receive assistance for the completion of the timely progress review. So the next slide is a screenshot of what that portion of our email looks like. And as you can see, we give several different options provided to the employment specialist to help facilitate the obtaining of the verification of pay either via secure email, secure fax, postal mail, or we can actually have the individual can hand deliver copies of them to the employment specialist during personal face-to-face meetings.
Okay, so for the stats portion of our email, we utilize ETO, or Efforts to Outcome, for our data collection, our case notes, our demographics, and our reports. We want to ensure that our records are a reflection of the most current status for each individual. We provide updates on regular benchmark intervals, whether there's been a change or not. We also provide updates when we become aware of changes, including the demographics, emergency contacts, support staff, employment such as wages, hours, supervisor, or even the employer. And then here's a screenshot of that. And so our regular intervals for updating the employment record is at 90 days, 6 months, and 1 year. And then we also record as changes occur.
Okay, the next portion of our Stubbs, Stats, and Starks email is our Starks. We track placements each month in ETO. We understand that job placements are essential to assisting someone in reaching their short-term goal, but we also understand that retention is just as important and that we must provide continued employment supports to assist someone in reaching their long-term goal. So with that being said, we've developed a post-employment support checklist in an effort to proactively identify any potential barriers to job retention and provide support and services to the individual to overcome said barriers. So the next slide, again, is a screenshot of our Starks portion of the email. And then the next two slides, we've included a portion of our post-employment support checklist. And if you see from the top right-hand corner, we allow the employment specialist to indicate whether this individual is under a Partnership Plus agreement and who that OVR counselor is. We do provide that shaded gray box so that the employment specialist, again, is able to indicate whether there have been changes in their wage, their hours, and their supervisor so that we can have them recorded in our ETO database. And then the next, the top half is the first five questions of our post-employment support checklist. They include addressing if the individual is having any difficulties filling their job duties, if they're current job duties match their interests, if there's been any changes to their job duties that they may need assistance or job coaching with at this time, if they're currently having any issues with child care or transportation or budgeting, and then finally, are if they're experiencing any stress or conflicts in the workplace. Then the next slide is the bottom half of our post-employment support checklist and has the next five items, including if the individual is experiencing any negative effect on their personal or family life due to working, if there are any current or upcoming medical appointments that need to be addressed with their employer, such as requiring to request time off, if they have any questions about their Social Security benefits, and if so, making sure if they haven't already been referred to a WIPA for benefits counseling. And then also in the near future, if they anticipate leaving their current position for any reason. And then we also allow the employment specialist to make a determination at that point if they feel that the individual appears to be motivated for success in his or her current position. Again, we do this each month with every individual that we provide services to in job support, whether they're working through the Ticket to Work program or not. We feel it's really important to be proactive and identifying potential barriers before they become an issue so that we can help them maintain their position. Finally, the last part of our sub-staff and starts email is related to Partnership Plus. In an effort to proactively identify anyone that may be a potential Partnership Plus candidate, we have the individuals identify those individuals, we want to be able to provide the seamless support services that are available to the individual under a Partnership Plus agreement. We've been working with our local OVR offices to carry out this agreement as written and develop points of contact. We've also been presenting to these local OVR offices in an effort to work together on behalf of the beneficiary. So the next slide is a screenshot of what that portion of our email looks like. As you can see, we ask our employment specialist to try and proactively identify any individual that might be approaching their 90-day successful closure under an OVR job coaching contract. And if they are, to notify me if the individual is approaching their 90-day successful closure, as well as if they can benefit from continued employment supports to either help them keep their job, to help them increase their earnings over time, to receive assistance in career advancement, and to work towards independence and self-sufficiency. So we always make sure that the individual employment specialists are trying to identify those candidates. Finally, we've included our Partnership Plus flowchart that we've developed. We went through our Partnership Plus agreement and identified all the things that we at Goodwill as an EN would be responsible for, as well as all the steps that OVR would be taking to ensure the successful Partnership Plus agreement on behalf of an individual. So I'm not going to go through all the steps, but this is available if you need a copy. Finally, basically, I've included a map of our 22 Pennsylvania counties. As you can see, it's pretty large. So how do we manage the Ticket to Work program across 22 Pennsylvania counties? Easy, with teamwork. We have our Ticket to Work program manager, which is myself. We have our Ticket to Work administrative assistant, which is Elaine. We have our great team of Ticket to Work regional employment specialists and their management team. And we also have our director of mission services in the Northwestern region.
Okay, so in order to complete the Substats and Starts email, first we need to gather caseload information, and then once we have the caseload information, we're able to send the email. And the email works as a reminder to employment specialists to collect and submit the pay stubs. I currently use an Excel spreadsheet to calculate payment availability based on the benefits. However, the portal does have something similar called a monthly earnings estimator that you could use. And then what we do use the portal for is to submit payment requests and EN status reports. And then typically we identify those needing a certificate of service when we complete the employment monthly wage summary, but you can also use the payment status report to cross-reference when a client is coming up to a milestone payment that would require a certificate of service.
Yeah. I just didn't know. AAA's in there, too.
I didn't know. Okay, Donna, it's back to you.
Okay, well, thank you so much. We are going to actually take a couple of questions from the chat room, if we have any in there. I would like to reiterate some of the points that really make your presentation an effective practice. So for our call participants, if you go back through this presentation, please take a second look at their efforts to outcome, the retention practices in their tracking placements. The post-employment checklist is an excellent follow-up. The Partnership Plus flowchart is awesome. And the whole concept of the teamwork and the portal usage that you use. So, call participants, please go back and look at some of those things. Do we have any questions from the chat right now?
No, we don't.
Okay.
Basically, just people would like to have a copy of the documents if possible.
Yes, I am going to, right now, we have put up Jennifer's and Elaine's email addresses and their phone numbers. We can also put some of the documents up on our website, which we will do. But in speaking with Elaine and Jennifer, you ladies would prefer for people to contact you directly. Is that correct?
Yeah, that would be perfect, yep. And we could provide any answers, if they needed other, you know, some of the forms, that would be.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jennifer and Elaine, so much for your presentation today. And at this point in time, I would like to turn the call back over to Rob.
I'm going to, I guess at this point, I'll turn it over to Michelle. Or we'll just go to the next item on the agenda. I'll go to Laura. She's here with us, and she's ready to talk about the paper tickets. So go ahead, Laura.
Sure. I'm not sure what the questions have been asked, but I can tell all of you that the
when it might start.
The resumption of the paper tickets will begin April 1st, and we'll be sending out about 60,000 tickets. Annually. They will not obviously go to all beneficiaries. They will go to a selected population.
Thank you, Lori. And as far as, let's move on to the next item, which is an update from ENSB.
Hi, this is Kara Kaplan. We just wanted to let everybody know that our baseline calls to ENs have begun. We have made progress calling about a third of the ENs thus far. A lot of asks for specific training on those calls, which we are coordinating with Maximus, and that is underway right now. We've gotten a lot of good feedback from ENs. And one thing is, if you have not gotten a call from your EN specialist yet, because this process, you know, will take a little while for everybody to get their first call, and you have something you need to talk to your EN specialist about or some type of dire need, you can always contact the EN service at ssa.gov mailbox, and it will get to your correct person, and they will make that a priority to answer.
Thank you, Paula.
Well, I'm not done.
Okay.
And I'm going to hand it over to Marty Mattee, who's working very closely with our staff on contracts, and he just has some issues he would like to bring up.
Well, it's just one issue, actually. It's been brought to my attention over the last month or so that we've had three proposals involving ENs in which the person who's actually proposing for a new BPA is an employee of an EN already. And I just wanted to point out to all of you the section in the RFQ and also in your BPAs. It's actually Part 3, Section 1E. It's on page 14. And it says very clearly that individuals are precluded from being awarded EN agreements while simultaneously employed by state VR agencies, Work Investment Act organizations, or other employment networks. So any of you who are contemplating setting up an employment network of your own, you're going to have to take steps to end your relationship with the existing EN that you're working for. If there's any questions, if any of you have any questions concerning that, bring it to the attention of your ENSB specialist, and they can refer it to me, and I can get back to you. But that's the rule. It's been in there for since the beginning of time, and I just want to make sure that all of you are aware of it, because apparently some folks have overlooked it.
Two more things. Okay. Also, the BOSS work group is resuming, and a blast went out already to all the ENs, so we just wanted to make you aware of that. And we have a question about what do you go to Maximus for versus what do you go to your EN specialist for. What you go to Maximus for is if you have payment-related questions, you should go to the payments help desk. If you have the Maximus portal-related questions, you should go to the portal help desk. And if you have ticket assignability questions, you should go to Maximus for that as well. For right now, everything else, you should go to your EN specialist. Oh, and the protocol that we took down a while ago because we needed to update that, that is also back up on the Maximus website. So that should clarify some questions as well.
And also, I think, Kara, in terms of if an EN contacts the EN service branch and has an issue that would be related to Maximus, where Maximus could provide direct support, we would just refer them in that instance. So there's no necessarily right or wrong in terms of, you know, how that approach. We'll make the connection one way or the other.
Right. If you have a question about it, you can come to us, and we will definitely direct you in the right direction.
And I want to thank Marty for his input. We're fortunate to have Marty working with us on a part-time basis, so it's good to have him here. So, Michelle, I'll kick it back to you for the next item on the agenda.
Sure, thank you. Actually, the new ticket portal, the preparation and the portal pilot, I believe Desiree will be speaking to that.
Yes, thank you, Michelle.
You're welcome.
Yeah. We're only about 90 days before we'll have a portal that is completely built and ready for use. We've been giving you tidbits of information about the portal monthly for a few months now, but today we'd like for you to start thinking about being prepared in a serious way. And I just want to mention, and we may have mentioned before, but there are three main requirements for accessing the portal. Getting the My Social Security account, having security clearance, and having the proper secure browsers. And I should mention with the Social Security account that you have to have the extra security. And also, I'm not sure if we made it clear in the past, but I want to make sure we make it clear today that you also have to have a smartphone. It does not work with a landline. You have to use a smartphone. You're going to get a code that you will put in the portal for each portal session. So we're going to attach something to today's meeting minutes that gives you the information I'm sharing now, but it will also give steps, a few high-level steps of what the security clearance involves, and it will include the details of the browsers, which we may have shared verbally or perhaps even in writing, but we want to put those three requirements together so that everyone will have them and know that those are the three things that you will need to do. Maximus will be providing assistance, documents or other means of information will be made available to you, and we're working with them to do that now. But if you want to venture ahead and go to socialsecurity.gov to My Social Security Access, feel free to do it. But we will be sharing guidance in the future. And that's really all I wanted to say about the portal today. But I did want to mention that the portal pilot has the planning is underway, and we do have a handful of people. We only needed a handful of people for what we're calling the first phase of the pilot. And the functionality for the first phase is strictly query. So you would be able to see, who your clients are and what activity you have in terms of what's been paid, what's pending, those kinds of things. So it is limited access. We are going to have another systems release in November, and we'll bring in more people into the pilot. So in anticipation of the November pilot, it would be good to make sure that we have folks who have met the requirements that could come in. It'll be up to our systems counterparts what the limitation is on how many people they would want to participate in the pilot. But we do appreciate everybody's willingness and the people who have already agreed to work with us on the first limited phase.
Can I just because there's a lot of questions right now that Desiree is talking, so she's not reading them, but the extra security on the mysSA.gov, that's not just for the pilot. That is to get into the portal for eternity. Everybody has got to have the mysSA.gov with extra security if you're ever going to get into the portal.
Yeah. All of the requirements pertain to getting into the portal, whether it's the pilot or when we get to January. We don't yet have a schedule of how we're going to migrate people to the portal. I do see someone up there is asking what new portal. So it's a good thing we're talking about the portal today. But for the sake of those who may have missed a previous meeting or so where we mentioned the portal, the secure provider portal that you currently access through Maximus' website is going to be replaced with what we were calling the ticket portal, which will be on SSA's website, and it will connect directly to the systems that we use, so you will be able to get certain information in real time. Some things will show up, right after you do them, that sort of thing. But that's the portal. If you want to go to Maximus's website to look at some of the prior meeting minutes, if you were away for a month or two, you'll get some background information about the portal probably in each of the last couple of notes.
Yeah. And there's a lot of questions. We're probably getting about 20 seconds here.
I see something that says, doesn't everybody need a phone to access the portal? Yes, you do, but you need it to be a phone where you can receive the code.
Which will come by text message, yes.
And you do have to have the extra security or you are not getting into the portal.
And if you have suitability clearance, you have to have federal level suitability clearance. If you were cleared through the Office of Personnel Management, then that would be the acceptable clearance. If you were perhaps a WIPA, and you got clearance for that, that may very well be what you need. But we would still need to have you participate when we come out asking for those folks who plan to use the portal. And then you would just annotate when you submit your name that you are in fact believe you have suitability clearance, and we'll check that out. But if you think you have suitability clearance, just still submit your name. You're going to get something, what are we calling it? I think it's a sort of an applicant list, and the names of the folks from your particular organization will have to go on that list. We're going to try to coordinate through a point of contact for each agency. So if there are two or three people at your agency who need to have this clearance, then we would want to coordinate through one person. But then you would get an individual link to access the Office of Personnel Management System to fill out your questionnaire. But we're going to put these steps in an email, and then there's also going to be other opportunities and guidance that will have all the fine details to help you navigate this process and avoid some of the pitfalls that we know people have had in the past.
I know the other question, and people with the pilot were confused on this one as well. When people are saying the new portal or whatever, people have told us, I already have access into the portal. What you have access now into is the secure provider portal that Maximus runs. This is the ITOPS SSA portal. The Maximus portal will eventually be shut down, and this portal will take over. They are two separate portals.
Yeah, I mean, it's the next generation. You'll be able to do the things you're used to doing. The navigation will be different, and there are a couple of details that are different. The marketing file will be in there. I don't have notes with me today, and it's not fresh in my memory. It seems like there was one or two things that were not going to be in there. But, you know, we will have a comprehensive overview of everything again before we get to January. We've been mentioning a little here and a little there on the various meetings. But, yes, it will be a different entity, but it will allow you to get your report, to do timely progress reviews if you use it for that purpose, and to request payments. For example, I think someone asked on last month's call, would you still be able to upload a payment request form? You wouldn't be able to upload a payment request form, but you wouldn't need to, because you would fill it out online. You would just enter a very limited amount of payment information, so I wouldn't even call it a fillable form. It's just a couple of fields of information in order to request the payment. Yeah.
Can one person, can two people share one?
I don't know. Someone is asking about whether two people can share one phone. I'm not sure, which I would doubt it, because I guess I should mention that the My Social Security account gives you access to your own personal earnings information that we have maintained here at Social Security. So you would be able to see your Social Security statements about your employment history and earnings. So that's personal, and that wouldn't be shared with anyone. Since that code is going to the person with a specific identity, then it stands to reason that only one person could use that phone. You know, we can double check, but more than likely that's the way it is, that only one person could use that phone.
And a lot of
code.
And a lot of people are asking, what is extra security? It is a two-step process on the mysSA.gov page. And when you get the extra security, SSA is going to mail to your house a PIN number, and SSA is using that PIN number to allow you to access it into the portal. Your background's just being checked out a little more. I mean, this is something very new for SSA. We're giving you, you know, letting you into our records, which we've never done for the public before.
Yeah. And so we're using the same authentication system that we use when you go to your own personal information, except you will have a web address, and if you come in through the portal web address, the system will identify you based on your PIN that's associated with your MySSA account, and then it'll route you to the portal if we also have information in our records that say you have a suitability clearance and that you are, in fact, an employee of a particular employment network or VR agency. So the system is checking all those things, but it is identifying you and verifying that you are, in fact, the person you say you are based on the process that's there when you go to your personal information. So it is a very secure system, and you are actually in a portal that connects to, you know, millions of records. You know, even when you think about the marketing file alone, that's a large, you know, potential risk of PII. And so we have to have it as secure as possible. And so these are the requirements for when you're coming into to the portal. And Maximus will be there to, you know, help you adjust to these processes with some valuable information if you need it. But from the folks that have done the MySSA account, most folks have not had problems with it, and sometimes there are things you may encounter that you might have to contact your Social Security office if there's some out-of-date information, if they don't have the right name or some things in their records that don't correspond to your current status. But if Social Security has your correct information, then the registration process should be relatively smoothly. But we are stressing, remember to register for the extra security, because that's essential for accessing the portal. And we will attach information to the meeting notes about this, and as I said, there'll be an opportunity for some further guidance on these topics.
Thank you, Desiree. We look forward to the continued conversation on this. I'm sure we're going to get additional questions, and with the handouts and instructions, I'm sure that will help a lot of the EENs understand the process a little clearer. So it's one of those steps that we are going to cover during each of our upcoming calls. So
yeah. I will mention that someone has asked that if I already have my SSA account, is there something new I need to do? If you, when you registered, you did not register for extra security, you would have to do that. And you would know whether you registered for, you may know whether you registered for extra security if you received a PIN in the mail. So that you may have to take an additional step if you did not receive a letter with a PIN number.
Okay, so that PIN number is key. If you've registered before, you need to make sure you have received a PIN number. Hello? Desiree?
Yeah, that's it, Michelle.
Okay. You're welcome. I just thought there was a disconnect there on the phone line. All right, we're going to move on to Sally Rose. She's going to be giving us two updates, actually. One quick update on the OFCCP webinar that took place in August. And just a recap briefly of the Community of Practice Section 503 session that we had also in August. Sally?
Thank you, Michelle. Before I get started, Des, can I ask you a question about the smartphone issue? Smartphone implies a cell phone where you've paid for a monthly data package, and I think what we need is just a phone that can get a text message. Am I wrong there?
I will have to check. They call it smartphone and all the information I've seen here. I don't know. I know you just need to be able to get a text message. I've seen the acronym SMS.
Okay. Okay.
And I've seen the word smartphone, but I think the essence is you need to be able to get a text message. We can clarify that for the notes and on a future call as well.
And our understanding
okay.
is
thanks.
This.
Okay,
this
I'm just going to give a very brief overview of actually three information-packed webinars that we have done in the past month. The August 13th one was a webinar that featured experts from the Office of Federal Contract Compliance Programs presenting on changes to Section 503. They did a detailed summary of the changes, and it was very interesting to know that they recognized IANS as an important employee referral resource for federal contractors. They actually, the presenters encouraged IANS to apply to the OSCCP Employer Resource Referral Directory, the ERRD, and they provided information on how to apply. As you may be aware, OSCCP and Social Security established a partnership late last year whereby Social Security invited IANS, public entity, and nonprofit IANS to complete the profile that's required to be listed in the ERRD, and then Social Security submitted batch submissions of these profiles. And as of today, 140 IANS have been enrolled in the Disability and Veterans Community Resource Directory, which is a subdirectory of the ERRD as a result of this effort. In addition, there were some comments made during this presentation that led us to believe that maybe for-profit IANS could be on here. So Social Security and AWSM have sent a request to OSCCP asking for permission for SSA to issue an invitation to the for-profit IANS to complete that profile and have them referred over as a batch referral for the directory. And we're awaiting a response at this point, but we encourage you, if you're a for-profit IAN, to go ahead and apply individually to be listed in the directory. And the procedures for that application process are on the DOL website at www.dol.gov/OFCCP/ERRD/ERRSRVS. And you can go there and you'll figure out how to apply to be on the directory. The PowerPoint for this particular webinar, the OSCCP webinar, has not been posted yet, but the audio and the transcript are available, and they're available on the OSCCP website, which is, again, www.dol.gov/OSCCP. When you get there, you can click on the 503 announcement on the scrolling banner, and then when you get to the 503 page, you look for the technical assistance session, and you will see a link you can click on to attend training webinars, and you're going to find there all of the OSCCP archived webinars on 503 and the Veterans Era, the Vietnam Veterans Era Readjustment Assistance Act, and any announcements about upcoming webinars. We also had an August 20th webinar where Michael Murray from the Office of Personnel Management presented on the federal government as a model employer of people with disabilities. This was very information-packed webinar. Mr. Murray repeatedly acknowledged the value of the National Network of Employment Networks and the unique role that IANS can play in referring qualified applicants for jobs with the federal government. And Mr. Murray offered strategies for making the business case for hiring people with disabilities when you're discussing this with prospective employers. He identified a number of resources that IANS can access, which include reports and statistics that can be used to build your business case for hiring people with disabilities. Mr. Murray highlighted several strategies in particular for helping job seekers obtain federal employment, and they included things like verifying a disability and applying through the non-competitive Schedule A hiring authority, applying through the USA Jobs competitive website, but also as a part of that, uploading the person's Schedule A letter, getting your job candidates to the OPM shared list, which is managed through a group called Bender Consulting, and this is a company that OPM contracts with to further screen and interview Schedule A candidates to assist federal agencies to quickly fill qualified positions with qualified applicants. He also discussed ideas for connecting with hiring managers in federal agencies once an application is in play for a particular job opening. And he explained what the conversion period is under the Schedule A appointment authority. That is actually a 2 to 3 year period of successful employment that allows the employee then to convert to a competitive service or career position within the federal government. To get the full impact of this really, really wonderful webinar, we strongly encourage you to visit the archive presentation of Mr. Murray's presentation. This is on the Ticket to Work website. Go to the Information Center, click on Events Archive, and look for the 503 Community of Practice ones, and look for the August 20th listing. Yesterday, we also had our September 503 Community Practice Forum. During this one, Marie Strahan and I provided a practical toolkit presentation on locating and engaging federal contractors and subcontractors. We actually conducted live demonstrations of how to search three key data banks that are maintained by the federal government for specific business and administrative purposes. Those websites were the Federal Procurement Data System, USA Spending, and the Systems for Awards Management, or SAM, which you should all be familiar with. We discussed that these are all websites developed for specific purposes, but you can repurpose the information in these websites and use them to identify and then mine information on federal contractors and subcontractors. We also compiled and reviewed many of the strategies that have been shared by your EN peers in the past several months on how to effectively connect with and market your ticket customers to federal contractors once you have identified the contractors you want to target your marketing efforts to. The PowerPoint from yesterday's 503 presentation is currently on the Ticket to Work website in the Information Center under Upcoming Events. We will probably receive the recording of the 503 presentation yesterday next week. At that point, the PowerPoint and the audio recording will be moved to the Events Archive page in the Information Center. I also want to point out that we have in the Information Center, we have some useful tools, a guide on using the Federal Procurement Data System and on the USA Spending website, and some tips for discussing Section 503 with federal contractors. And all of this is in the Information Center, and you want to look for the 503 page, and when you get to look at under Founding Federal Contractors, and you'll find these unique and useful resources. I've only highlighted really some key things in these. I really encourage you to either visit for the first time or revisit the archives of these presentations. That's it. Thanks, Michelle.
Thank you, Sally. And again, please visit our Information Center. We really have built over the last year. I can't believe this has been almost a year, Sally. Is that correct? We have talked about 503.
It is a year in November.
Okay, all right, so it's approaching soon. In any case, we have a wealth of information, and thank you for contributing to that, Sally. We really have a nice information center on 503, so thank you for all your work on that with Charlene Dwyer. Moving on to announcements, we've received a few questions regarding the Employment Network Payment Status Report, and we just want to, again, kind of share with you a few helpful hints on how to utilize that report. One good thing about the report we want to stress to you is that the Employment Network Payment Status Report, one, you know that it's available in the portal, but it's also updated daily, reflecting the latest data available at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time the previous day. We do want to highlight two features if you are still look at your website there on the value information that's available in the report. In the report, you will find per Social Security number the status of the payments related to that employment outcome, as if it's open, if the payment is in process, if it's pending, if it's been paid, if it's been denied. And going to the next document there, we will show you that under payment status, you will have some type of outcome reported on that individual payment. And then under where you see the red circle there, it has EN follow-up required. This report actually, if you see the word anywhere listed yes, next to it is a corresponding comment that actually requires a follow-up by the EN. So we're giving you real-time information as to when the report was last updated with information that we believe will be helpful to you in correcting any of your payment denial information. So, again, under the EN follow-up required column, you will be able to see the word yes. In the example we're giving you, We actually didn't find any that needed follow-up, but there will appear the word yes in that column, and next to it again under comments, there will be a description where you would see action steps that you will need to complete in order to obtain payment on that particular case. We will open it up soon to questions, but we felt, given some of the additional emails we've received about the Employment Network Payment Status Report, that these two features would be very helpful to you. As far as the recap of the Ticket Tuesday training session, next week we will have a technical assistance session. Following on September the 23rd, we will be speaking during our Ticket Training Tuesday Timely Progress Review. And on September the 30th, 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, will be the All EM Payments Call. At this time, that concludes our agenda. And operator will open it up to questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to register a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. One moment, please, for the first question. Our first question comes from the line of Patrick Gallagher. Please proceed.
Hello, Patrick.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, thank you. Thank you for calling in.
Oh, sure. I heard you say about the having your socialsecurity.gov account. How do you sign up for that? For the extra security clearance?
Yes, you go to socialsecurity.gov. There'll be a place where you can create your My Social Security account, and it will walk you through the steps for doing that, and you'll get to a question that asks, would you like to request extra security? You would check yes, and there'll be a series of screens associated with that.
Okay. So you go on there and you click on that you would like to accept more security?
It'll just be one of the questions. You'll get a series of questions.
Okay.
You know, personal identifying information they'll ask you, and, you know, they'll need you to provide something like a credit card number or something like that. But there will be one question in particular that will ask you, would you like to register for extra security? Because you don't have to do that normally when you're just wanting to access your own information. But you will be able to do that, and you should do it. You must do it when you're registering to access the portal in addition to your own personal information. So
Go ahead. Oh, when does this go into effect? Should we have already signed up for this account?
No. You need to have signed up and have gotten your PIN and communicated that to us. We're wanting to get this done by the middle of December. The portal will be ready in January, but not everybody will go in January. We're probably going to end up having to stagger converting folks into it, so we're probably going to be converting folks to the portal between January and March. But we haven't really pinned those dates down. So, you know, I would say, you know, by mid-December you should have done it. The sooner the better, though. And once you register for the extra security, you'll get something. The PIN will come in the mail in about 10 business days. So just keep that in mind if you're registering late in the year. But you can go there and at any time.
And that PIN we would use to access the portal when we get in?
Actually, you will give the PIN to us, and we'll maintain that PIN in our system, and you shouldn't share it with anyone else.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll give more information about that how you're going to communicate, Kate, that pin to us, either to your representative here on the EN Services branch, or through a secure website that we have that we can communicate with you through. But we'll get more information about that later, but you should secure that pin and keep it private. But once we put it in our system, then you won't, I don't think you need to use it. You just use your, wait a minute. Yeah, I don't want to say anything wrong, but so I won't speak too much on it. But we will definitely have information available in writing for those who need it and who would like it, and we'll share that with you more as time goes on.
Okay.
But if you want to venture off into the website, it will guide you through the steps.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much for your answers.
You're welcome.
Operator, do you have another question?
It does not cost anything. People are asking if it costs money. It doesn't cost you anything.
No, it doesn't cost anything. This is a service that Social Security wants people to take advantage of. The MySFA account is your personal information that Social Security maintains. They want you to look at those statements. If you recall, we used to mail out statements maybe every year or every other year or something, and for the sake of cost savings, they stopped mailing them out, but you can go through this My Social Security account and access your personal earnings information.
That's any citizen of the United States.
That's
any citizen of the United States.
Yeah. And so it's there and it's available, and the agency would like people to go and check the records so you don't wait until retirement and find out we don't have some information, because you can always correct what's there if you need to, you know, by contacting your local office. Someone's asking if you can have two accounts. You cannot personally have two accounts, but if you work for two ENs, you can access the portal on behalf of each of those ENs, but you can only do business on behalf of one of those ENs per session. So if you work for two ENs, you can access the portal, on behalf of one or the other, using your same credential, but only one EN. You can only be in one EN, area at a time, and then you have to log in separately to go into the other.
And you can do it from home or from work. It doesn't matter.
Our next question comes from the line of Susan Webb. Please proceed.
Hey, everybody. How are you? I've asked this question three times, including on today's chat, and I don't know why I'm not getting an answer. But I have we're so concerned about our security and making sure that our information is not being used inappropriately. And yet, we're using our personal account on SSA to access a business-related portal. And now I'm hearing you say you want our password. What is it that I can feel secure about that somebody over there isn't going to get into my personal account and see my personal information?
We're not going to have your password. We're not going to have the code that you get on your personal smartphone. We're just having a six-digit number that the system needs to help verify you. And we don't have any reason to keep that number personally. Once it's in that table in the system, but that's only one piece of it. There are lots of things in that table that make you able to get to your information or make you able to get to your EN's information. No one here will be able to access your EN information. So even your EN service branch representative can't get into the portal to see your stuff. They have to go into our system called ITOPS, where we currently go into to see what's in our system. So they cannot see your personal SSA information or your EN portal information. We can only see the part of our system that we currently see.
I thought you had said that we were going to give you our password. I misunderstood. I thought you were saying that we should give you our password.
Oh, no. You shouldn't share that with anyone. Yeah. But we do have to have the PIN because that's what has to go into the system.
Okay. I'm sorry. That's what I was thinking. Okay. So
and
there's
actually,
a different PIN.
Susan, your PIN is synonymous, like, with your SSN. You shouldn't just be emailing that to us. That should go over that SecureGov email to us.
Okay. All right. Yeah, the PIN thing, because I went in for the extra security yesterday, and they said they were going to send it to me by mail in 7 to 10 days. So it is a two-step process, so I get it now. Okay, that helps to differentiate. I understand. Another question or an issue I think I want the other ENs on the call to understand. We had an incident happen recently where we were deleted from the EN list that Booz Allen sends out to beneficiaries when they call the toll-free number to find out more information. And if they request an EN list, then they get that list. We were not on it. And they investigated it, and what had happened was we got inadvertently dropped from some recent update. Now, this is not the same list as the one on the EN directory on Choose Work. This is a different list that we as ENs hardly ever see. I happened to find out because a ticket user came in and showed me the list and said, how come you guys aren't on this? So I can't believe that, and I know Mark's not there today, but I know that he and some other folks are looking at some sort of a cross-check to make sure that we were the only ones dropped, but it seems kind of weird that we might be. So I just want everybody to know you may have been dropped from that list, and I think the only way you can really find out at this point is to call the number yourself and ask them to send you the list for your service area so you can cross-check yourself to make sure that you're still on it. So I just wanted to make that awareness and announcement to people so they can check. We have enough trouble getting people to call us. We don't need to be off that list, too.
Yeah, but I would advise before we start, having hundreds of people calling the BAS about this, that we give Mark a chance to check into this. Because there may be a way through automation that we can verify that the list match or bring them up to date. So
Hi, Desiree.
Okay. Go ahead, Felix. Mm-hmm.
Hello, everyone. I'm Felix Stump. I'm the Deputy Project Director with the Operations Support Manager. And Susan, you're absolutely right that was an issue. But I think one thing I want to make clear was that what caused your EN to be dropped from that list, it wasn't simply an indicator in your file that got kind of miskeyed. That something that might be kind of like an example of a more widespread problem where each EN would need to be concerned individually as to whether or not they also were miskeyed somehow and inadvertently dropped from that file. It was a symptom of a systems error that was introduced when we performed an upgrade to the database that the BAS uses. And to your point, it is a separate process from what is used to populate the website. It's a separate database, or at least a different location for the database, what they use to send out the mailed lists of ENs to beneficiaries when they call, which is the list that you're talking about, Susan. It was an error, but it was corrected when we heard from you that this was going on. And so the correction that we performed addressed the issue across the board, because it wasn't an issue with the profile that we have on file for Arizona Bridge to Independent Living. It was an issue in translation of the data, and that was fixed. And so it wasn't an issue with your individual kind of item. It was further upstream than that, if that makes sense. And so in fixing that, not that it is a bad idea to confirm, to have a check to see that all the information is everywhere it needs to be. That's certainly important. But it isn't the case that right now a different EN could also be off the list and not know it and have it be because of the same reason, because The thing that caused yours was fixed.
Okay. Now everybody's alerted, though. If they're uncomfortable, they can still check on it. I just wanted to make it clear that just because you're on the EN directory doesn't mean you're on this other one, because you're right. They're two separate processes to populate the list.
Right.
And we don't know how long we were off the list even. So this is not a list that we typically see as ENs.
No, and you're right. It is. I'll kind of take this opportunity to stress that it isn't like a super secret list that you're not allowed to see. It's just it's part of the process where it's very easy for you to see the beneficiaries. The directory on the website is for the beneficiary, right? And it's very easy for you as an EN to go to the same directory and see what they see. It's less easy for you to see what they're receiving in their mail. And that's the only reason why you don't see this list. It's not because it's any sort of a private kind of a closely held thing. And you are right that to be on one list does not always mean that you're on the other, although it should. I mean, that is how it's supposed to work. It's not two separate. It should not generally function as two separate lists. Each have to be updated independently. They do function in tandem, and when one is changed, the other is changed in an automated way, with the exception of this incident where that did not take place, and the cause for that has been addressed and corrected. However, to your point, that does not mean that that may not happen again. I also do want to say that I think we do know how long that you were off the list, and it was between the time that you identified it for us and we fixed it. That was the point that it was corrected. The point that you began to fall off that list was the most recent update of the software, and that took place roughly a month prior.
Okay. That's good information. Should make people a little more comfortable. One other thing, and then I'll hang up because I want to give others a chance. Is Kara still there?
What is she? Yeah. Say that again, I'm sorry.
Is Kara still there, Kara Kaplan?
Yes, I am.
Kara, do you want to tell everybody about the recent enlightenment having to do with suitability clearance and the fact that we now can, when we have a job offer out to someone, we don't have to have them on payroll first before we go ahead and submit them for security clearance? You didn't cover that. I had sent in a little note that would be helpful for people to know.
We're working, Susan, this is Rob. We're working on a response to that, and we'll have that to you shortly.
You mean like in a blast or what? Like,
this is something that we've talked about internally, and from what I understand, we're
sort of doing this like a pilot right now, Susan. This isn't a national thing right this second. We're just seeing. We're not saying we're going to extend it forever. So we're just kind of piloting it with a couple of ENs right now to see how it works. Because this is a huge added expense to the government.
It could be, that's for sure. And so that was the point I wanted to make, that it's not something we can do willy-nilly. We have to be judicious about it. But it certainly is welcome news to ENs, because we sit here trying to figure out what people can do because they can't see PII. And if it takes 2 to 3 months to get somebody cleared, you're paying somebody a lot of money to not do what you hired them to do. So this is good news, and I certainly hope that...
This hasn't been finalized yet. We haven't had approval. We have to get approval from our associate commissioner and possibly our deputy commissioner. So this is still, we're not going to announce something that isn't happening yet.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for that. That's it. That's all I had. Nice to talk to everybody.
Our next question comes from the line of Ernest Wally. Please proceed.
Yes. I just have a question. We actually got our first ticket to work, and it has where other ENs can share in the ticket. I don't understand that.
Say that again?
Huh?
Well, restate your question. I think you got cut off a little.
Yeah, we just got our first ticket to work, so it's our first one.
Okay.
And on the ticket to work, it says that other ENs have or can share this ticket. But there was no other ENs on it. I don't know why that was on the ticket itself.
No, I think it's a split payment type of thing, I think, what you're talking about. And it's in the case that if a previous EN had assigned this ticket, there's a possibility that the payments could be split. It's not saying that it's going to happen.
How would that happen? I don't understand. If I have a customer assigns it to us, you're saying there could be money out there somewhere floating around in cyberspace that would be drawn on it? I don't understand.
It's if a beneficiary assigns their ticket to ENA, and now they've unassigned it from ENA, and they now assign it to you, ENA could have done a lot of work with this person, helped them get a job, whatnot. So what happens is it's called a split payment case, and some monies may go to you, and some monies may go to ENA.
Okay, so if monies were due. So if monies were due to the other EN, that's just money that would come up to the point they worked with the client, and then we would take over from there. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's more complicated than that. Not necessarily. But if you, what state are you from?
Louisiana.
Okay, if you want to give me your email, I can have the person from Louisiana contact you, and we can get you in contact with a payment specialist who can explain the whole thing to you.
Okay, I really need that because it's very confusing to me.
Why don't you do this? You email enservice@ssa.gov, state your question. I will see it. And your EN specialist, who is in charge of Louisiana, will also see it, and we will get you the help you need.
Oh, I'm sure I got it right. That's EN service, not services, just service.
Service, correct.
SSA.gov.
Correct.
Okay, I'll send that out. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you, everyone, for calling in today, and that concludes our call for today. We apologize for going past the hour, and we look forward to having all of you attend our next call. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes the conference for today. Have a great day, everyone.